You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, our shapeshifter today, joining us from Nairobi, Kenya, is Muchamlingo, Certified Emotional Intelligence Practitioner and Coach, founder and lead change maker from PTS Africa, the emotional intelligence company. She is an international award-winning trainer, moderator, and a keynote speaker. And what a pleasure it is to talk to her this evening. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And how are you?
I'm good. I'm actually in Cape Town today.
You are in Cape Town?
I'm tuning in. Yes, I'm in Cape Town today.
That's lovely.
And I'm often in Nairobi, yeah. But right now I'm in Cape Town.
Fantastic. Is it a pleasure or business?
So it's a combination. I now live between two countries.
Sure.
So I'm partly in Cape Town in SA, but my business is in Nairobi. So my family lives in Cape Town, but my business is in Nairobi. So I live between the two.
Sure. What's it like living between two countries? I mean, I once met this other guy on a flight, and he's living between South Africa and Europe, and he says he loves it. I'm like, the jet lag must just be something to. But I'm sure you got used to it. So what's it like living between two? I mean, you're constantly flying in and out.
So, you know what? One of the things COVID taught us is that work can be done remotely. So I think I don't travel as much as you would expect because oftentimes I'm able to do work online. So, for example, this week today, I've had a full day of meetings and every single one of them has been with people in Nairobi, but they've been online. So I tend to just kind of manage my schedule so that I'm not having to be up and down too much because it gets tiring.
Yes.
It's a short flight. It's 4 hours if you go direct with Kenya Airways. But it does get tiring if you're up and down all the time. So I try and manage my trips. I have an office and a team in Nairobi.
4 hours is not a short time. Phew, that's a long amount of time flying in the air. So
It is. I guess I'm thinking in comparison to this one who's going to Europe.
That
is a long flight.
that's quite a lot of time. But thank you so much, ma'am, for joining us this evening. We really appreciate it. And sounds like you've had a good day. Cape Town is synonymous with the cold. Is it cold? Because this side we are burning in Johannesburg.
No, it's warm. It is warm. I'm told that I had traveled last week, so I wasn't here. I'm told that it's cooler this week.
Yeah.
Last week apparently was crazy hot.
Sure,
I don't know. It's cooler now. So it's hot, but you know, there's the wind. Cape Town is very windy. That brings down the temperature a little. So it makes it bearable.
That's fantastic. By the way, I stay here in Johannesburg, my dream city to live in and retire in is Cape Town. So I envy you in a good way right now. So if you hear me being a little bit jealous.
It is a beautiful place. I mean, we've been here for about a year and a half now, not quite a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I keep asking my sons, you know, as we're driving home from school, I keep asking them, do you think the scenery will get tired? Like, do you think there's a point where you stop noticing how beautiful it is and it just becomes normal? Because for me, still a year and a half later, I drive down roads and I'm just like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's just so beautiful. It is a beautiful
place. It's a beautiful place. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If the jealousy is palpable in my voice, please understand where it comes from.
I feel you.
So that's definitely where I am going very soon. But we've got this segment, ma'am, which we call Shapeshifter. And this is where we talk to people like yourselves, you know, who are industry leaders, who are blessed, who are living the life that maybe there's young people that are looking up to you. They might not have had the opportunity to even ask you or get close to you, you know. So they're just watching you from afar. But this is an opportunity for them to actually listen and get to understand who you are, where you come mm-hmm. from? How did you even get to be where you are? And that's why we have mm-hmm. this very important segment, which is called Shapeshifters. But before I delve into just a little bit about you, we opened the show with a quote from Kenneth mm-hmm. Blanchard. And Kenneth says, "The key to successful leadership is influence, not authority." I want to hear what your thoughts are there.
I like that because, you know, what it tells us is that leadership isn't a position.
Yes.
Right? If you listen to that quotation, leadership is your ability to influence, your ability to get people to move in a particular direction, to take particular action.
Yeah.
And it's not about your title. So you could have a title, right? Mm-hmm. You could have authority in the sense that you are a leader by title, but you are not in any way able to inspire people to take action, then you're not really a leader.
Yeah.
But you could be someone who doesn't have a title, but you are inspirational, you are motivational. People want to be around you and they are encouraged by you and you carry them along.
Yeah.
Then you're a leader. So I like that quote because it just really teaches us. You know, back in the day, we saw leadership always as positional.
Yeah.
But I think more and more we realize that, it's not really positional.
Yeah.
It's really about how you interact with people.
Yeah. It's a difficult one. I mean, you are someone who leads people to influence them to do something, especially, you know, someone who is in Cape Town, but the business is in Kenya. You need to trust those people that your influence, when you talk to them, when you encourage them, they will do their job. Mm. But it's not an easy thing to influence people, eh?
No, it's not. It isn't. And I mean, I think what COVID did is it challenged leaders because whereas before you were managing by walking around, you were forced now to manage differently, right?
Yeah.
Because you're managing remotely. And it's the same thing that I have now. And, you know, look, at the end of the day, sometimes you get the wrong kind of person in the role and they won't, you know, they need to be supervised closely, right? So when you're not there, it means nothing gets done.
Yeah.
But if you focus on leading by results, where you focus on these are the objective, these are the things that someone needs to achieve, then it becomes easy for you to see if someone is pulling their weight or not.
Sure.
The thing about leadership as well is it's a learning curve.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not something you get perfectly right all the time. I think you're always learning as a leader.
Yeah.
You're learning how to get the best out of your people. I mean, for me, when I think of the word influence, I know sometimes influence can have a negative connotation.
Yes.
But really for me, influence is, you know, leadership is more about just getting the best out of your people.
Mm.
It's you know, really getting to understand people and looking for ways to support them and getting out of their way so they can do what they, you know, are supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the lessons I've learned. And I think moving me to Cape Town is God saying, get out of the way.
And
let people do what it is that you have hired them to do.
Hey.
And I'm trying to do more of that.
Yeah. And sometimes they just do a blunder and you need to pick up everything as a leader.
True. Sure. But you know, there's no growth without other people, right? So as a business owner, one of the things I've recognized is that, I can do everything and control everything, but then I limit my growth.
Yes.
Or I can open myself up to the possibility of, having people make a blunder. And it's happened where a blunder happens. But that's the only way to grow. So, you know, for me, I'm like, it's okay. Let's figure it out. Now, what you do as a leader is you then provide as much
guidance.
You know, when I look back at the times where there's been blunders and I'm honest with myself, I realize that I also contributed because maybe I did not provide enough guidance, right?
Yeah.
So as a leader, you need to learn your people so you know how to provide the guidance they need to minimize the blunders. But mistakes will definitely happen.
Yeah.
Mistakes would definitely happen. But that is the path to growth.
Yeah, that's where you are
here.
You
have to ask yourself,
yes,
do I want to grow or do I want perfection? Because it can't stay. Those two things don't coincide.
Hey, yeah, they are mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not an easy thing, this leading thing. Now, we've gone too far, but I want to go back. Where were you born? How was it? Mm-hmm. What were some of the challenges, socio-economic challenges, if at all, during your childhood as you grew up?
So, you know, I'm what we call I think they're called third generation kid or third culture kid.
Okay.
Third culture kid.
Okay.
So in the sense that I was born in one country, grew up in another, and I live in another. I was born in the UK.
Okay.
My parents went to university in the UK and they met and got married.
Yeah.
And they had my sister and I. So I was born in the UK.
Okay.
And then in 1980, Zimbabwe gained independence. My parents were originally from Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
So my parents decided to move back to Zimbabwe.
Okay.
So we moved to Zimbabwe. I have very few memories of arriving in Zimbabwe, but I was about 5 years old.
Okay.
So I actually started formal schooling in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And I did my primary school, high school, up until O levels. So Zimbabwe does O level, A level.
Yeah.
And then after I finished my O levels, my parents decided I should go back to the UK.
Sure.
So I moved back to the UK after my O levels and I did my A levels and university.
Yeah.
So I did my first degree at university and then I did my master's in the UK and I started working.
Yeah.
So that's my, you know, in a nutshell. Challenges I faced growing up. You know, I look back on, you know, growing up in Zim, and I realized that we lived in what was a utopia.
Okay,
Zimbabwe then. I know a lot of people look at Zimbabwe now, and there are very many spaces where we are, you know, castigated and a lot of negative things said about the country, but growing up, Zimbabwe was amazing. When I look back now, I mean, at the time when you're growing up, you don't realize, but it was amazing. You know, it seemed like a growing economy, you know, functioning economy. People went to work, bought houses, sent their kids to private school.
Yeah.
You know, I did private school for high school.
Mm.
And so I look back and realize that I had a, you know, pretty idyllic upbringing on one hand. My parents had some challenges, and I could say that I grew up in a somewhat dysfunctional, I call it a functioning dysfunctional home. Yes, I grew up in a functioning dysfunctional home. And when I was in form four, which is when you're 15 turning 16, my parents split up.
Okay.
My parents divorced at that point. So in that functioning dysfunctional home, there were ups and downs. You know, we had periods that were great and then periods that were not so great.
Yeah.
But looking back, my overriding, you know, feeling was, yes, there was that dysfunction, but Zimbabwe was a great place, a great place to live. You know, when I look back. You know what? When I think of the challenges that, you know, young people faced in general, look, I think I grew up in a somewhat middle class home. So maybe my perception is not what everyone's perception would be, right?
Yes.
My mom had a good job. You know, my dad had a good job. And they managed. I mean, I didn't have everything, definitely. I went to private school, and I remember there will be times where things are in fashion, like, you know, those basketball shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there'll be a part of me thinking, man, I wish I also had them. So we didn't have everything. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think my parents were those where, and some of it had to do with the dysfunction I talk about, I mentioned. So we were, you know, if you're looking at it on a scale, right, we're probably the bottom end of the middle class, if that makes sense.
You're just making it.
So we just slid in.
With one foot in there.
Slid in, yes. So we were able to go to these schools, yeah, but not necessarily able to do all the things that people, yeah, in these schools, yeah, did, right? So, yeah, all the kind of clothes and, yeah, and the holidays and, yeah, the like. But, you know, I give credit to my mom because, you know, my father was in and out, you know, in terms of his contribution, yeah, to the family. And single-handedly, yeah, my mom pretty much, you know, educated. Yeah. And we were four kids.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I always say, you know, much credit to my mom for managing to keep us in that bottom rung of the middle class, if you can call it that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm actually thinking about, and I love how you characterized Zimbabwe then as utopia, because I think a lot of people, like you also correctly saying, wouldn't even have that type of utopia view of Zimbabwe today if they were born, I suppose, I'm a 2000 and all those sort of stuff. And and I'll tell you where I'm going with this question. I was actually watching a clip of these young people, and in the clip, the father is apparently on a call, and he keeps on saying, my daughter, you know. And the child is heard laughing in the background, and then because of the laugh of the child, the father stops the call a little bit, tells the person on the other line that, please hold for me. And then he's like, why are you laughing? And then the child is like, it's not daughter, it's daughter. It's daughter, not daughter. No, so you were like those daughter, you know. So my question is, you know, you are not a daughter. You are a daughter.
No,
you
are a daughter.
Exactly.
That's so funny.
So I wanna understand, being a daughter, how has that shaped you to be the leading woman that you are today?
I think it gave me a hunger, right? You know, they say that the idea is your parents get you to a certain level,
yeah,
and then you want to push it beyond, right?
I see.
we don't wanna remain at the same level,
yes,
that our parents,
yes,
were at,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think being in that bottom rung of the middle class,
yeah,
you know. And again, partly because of, like I said, dysfunction,
yes,
in my home,
yes,
which manifested itself in a very serious ups and downs financially,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
I think it. I came out of that feeling that I wanted more financial security,
yeah,
and I wanted to push,
yeah,
even further.
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, working hard in school, wanting to finish my undergraduate,
yeah,
wanting to get my master's, you know what I mean? There was that drive, this,
yeah,
hunger,
yeah,
to ensure greater stability and,
yeah,
you know, a different legacy for,
yeah,
my children, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's,
sure,
we are really shaped by our upbringing.
Yes.
I think far more than we realize.
Yes.
Far more than we realize. We underestimate the power of our upbringing and how it shapes us. And that's, I think, what's so exciting about the work I do, because the work I do is about helping people to unpack who they are at their core, right? And not just who they are in terms of what you want people to see, but who you really are deep down inside, which is what I do.
Sure.
And I think that's really exciting because I recognize from my own experience,
yeah,
the power of digging deeper, right? So when I talk about dysfunction, you know, I then had to go on a journey of unpacking that, right?
Sure.
What impact has this had on me,
yeah,
on my choices, on my parenting, on the way that I lead, on just how I show up, on my Christianity, you know, because it even affects our Christianity. You know, our fathers are our first representative,
yeah,
of the Heavenly Father.
Yeah.
So if you have a somewhat dysfunctional relationship with your earthly father, it influences how you see the Heavenly Father, right?
It does. It does.
And so until you can heal from that earthly relationship, you there's limitations in how you interact with the Heavenly Father. I mean, I'm fortunate that my parents are both late now, but I'm fortunate that before my dad passed, we had built a relationship.
Yeah.
But growing up, you know, I had a very, you know, my dad was a great man, very intelligent, but he was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And his addiction to alcohol really shaped him in so many ways. And so when he was good, he was very good.
Very good.
Great to be around, funny, very smart, you know, entertaining. But then when it was bad, it was bad. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So, so I think in answer to your question, I tend to give long answers to questions.
No, that's interesting insights. That's definitely interesting insights.
I think, it drove me and it pushed me and it still does. It still does.
Yeah.
It still pushes me.
No,
and I think what it also did is it just helped me to see that you can be whatever you want to be.
Yeah.
Right? The limitation is in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, because one of the challenges that you find, especially with people who are daughters and not daughters, is that the environment, even though the parents might be trying so hard, right, to actually encourage them and make them believe that, yes, you can do it, you can be something better.
Mm.
But the moment they step out of, you know, the house and into the reality of what's out there, what they're looking at, what they see on a day-to-day basis, and sadly, so even the teachers at school and the schools that they go to often do not encourage them to dream, do not encourage them to see beyond their circumstances and all that. But you find that in more affluent places and suburbs, you know, the teachers are there to say, hey, you can be anything you want. And that fuels you. That fuels you in your studying. That gives you that thing that I can be able to make it. And you find that that's what happens most of the time. But I want to go back then to, you spoke about the work that you do. Did you really want to get into what you are doing, or you just stumbled upon it?
That's a really good question. So, you know, I feel that if God was having a conversation about me, he would say, this daughter of mine is just a slow learner. Because literally he had to create opportunities for me to end up where I ended up.
Sure.
So I went to university to do engineering. My later, as I mentioned, my parents' marriage fell apart when I was about 16, 15, 16. And my mom later remarried.
Yeah.
And so my stepdad has children.
Yeah.
So he has a daughter a year older than me.
Yeah.
And then I have a sister. He has other children as well. But for this story, he has the daughter a year older than me. And then I have a sister who is a year younger than me.
Yeah.
And it so happened that we, all three of us, went to university the same year. The three of us. And all three of us went to university to do engineering. I don't think it was a case of we, in Shona we say kufurirana, like we didn't, what's the English word, goodness, we didn't like tell each other that let's go and do this. It just so happened that that's what we seemed to like. I enjoyed maths and physics in school, and I thought engineering would be a good combination.
Yeah.
So I went to uni, did engineering, and I hated it. My sisters loved it, and they both are engineers now. Different types of engineering.
Yeah.
One's mechanical, one's electronic. But I hated it. So at the end of the first year, I decided that I was not going to continue because university was not for suffering.
Yeah.
And so I changed. And now my challenge was I didn't know what to do, because as long as I had known, I wanted to do engineering.
Yeah.
So I then switched and did maths instead.
Yeah.
So I came out of university with this degree and I didn't really know what to do next.
Sure.
So I just thought, okay, let me do a master's in finance.
Sure.
So I did a master's in finance, and then I went into the world of financial services, and I worked in financial services for a bank, for insurance company, different kind of jobs.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I say God would say I'm a slow learner is if we track back.
Sure.
I love teaching.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, you know, if I speak in the language of Seventh-day Adventists, I believe teaching is one of my spiritual gifts. But I love to teach.
Yeah.
But I ran away from teaching when I finished my degree in maths because I just could not imagine teaching children full time. And I just felt that they don't pay people enough money to be teachers, right? They really don't. And remember, at this point, I'm living in the UK where, you know, you're not really allowed to discipline. I just felt like I would kill them, right? So I never at that time realized that I could teach adults. I don't know why. It never crossed my mind. So anyway, I run away from this gifting I have. And I find myself in financial services. And then I'm working in a bank and I'm miserable. So this is maybe 5 years into being a I actually was starting to manifest symptoms of depression. I mean, I didn't know what it was then. I wouldn't have called it that, but that's what it was. I hated my job. I'd go in every day, do my job, but I hated it. I remember I handed in my resignation and my friends in the branch were like, okay, have you got another job? I'm like, no, but if I keep working here, I'm going to go crazy. At this time, I don't know what I want to do. I'm clueless. I'm having a very early midlife crisis. I'm like, I don't know what I wanted to. And so I, so in the UK at the time, there was this website called Monster where you used to upload your CV. And so I'd uploaded my CV. So my CV has my financial services background. I'd done some certifications in financial services. But I also, you know how it is in your CV, they tell you to write your like voluntary work. I also mentioned that I teach. Because I used to teach in church all the time, like all through, I always taught in church. And so I think there was a, I guess a, there was a recruiter, I guess, who saw my CV and thought, and so they called. I saw your CV online. I have a role, but it's not in financial service directly. It's in the training department. And I was like, what? And so this recruiter says to me, I've got a client, it's a financial services company, but they're looking for someone to train the financial advisors and stockbrokers, not to be a financial advisor. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. I mean, at this point, I would have been like, I'll take any job. Remember, I've quit my job, right? So I don't have a job. I've quit the job. I've left the bank. And I've got no job. I'm temping, but I've got no job. I'd moved back with my mom because I was just like, I don't know what to do here. So I go for the interview and I get the job. Do you know, I remember when I started working, I remember saying to my manager, I feel like I was born for this. Like, you know, it was such a mind blowing experience. And I remember telling my manager, oh my goodness, I wish I had found this job earlier. And he said something to me, he said to me, but you know what? Maybe if you'd found it earlier, you wouldn't have appreciated it as much.
Yes, that's true.
And I was like, okay, fair enough. So I always tell the story that God gave me a job that I did not apply for. A job that I was not qualified for because I didn't have any experience training. But yes, God gave it to me because he realized that if you waited for me, I would never find my my purpose.
Look at that.
So that's how I ended up in training. That's how I ended up in training. Then in terms of running my consultancy. Fast forward a few years, I'm married and we're living in the UK and then my husband gets the job in Kenya. And so we decide as a family to move to Kenya. And so I left my job and I got to Kenya and I just could not find anything that worked. And, you know, fast forward another few years, I've made a friend at church and this friend gets to know me and my background and says to me, you know what? We're looking for a trainer to come and train us in my organization. Are you interested? So I was like, okay, let me try. And I'll never forget when they paid me, I looked at this check and I thought, because one of the reasons why I had not taken jobs in Kenya was everything that came up, I just felt like was paying too little. So the opportunities that came up, I mean, I just felt like, because back then, things have changed a little, but back then, the role of training was a very junior role.
Yes.
It's not a strategic role in many organizations. Yeah. It's like an officer.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, no, I can't. The job I left, I was way above an officer level. I'm not going backwards.
Yeah.
Right. So I remember when I got this check, I remember looking at this check and thinking, this is more than what guys have been offering me on a monthly basis.
Yes.
Why would I go and work for someone?
Ah,
and that was it.
That's how you started.
Right there and then started my business. Yeah.
Sure. That's amazing. I fell in love with EQ on a cold Tuesday morning in Johannesburg, South Africa. Tell us a little bit about that one.
So when I started, so remember my background is in financial services.
Yes.
I have been working in sales, basically.
Yeah,
so in the bank, we sold banking products. For the insurance company, we sold insurance products.
Yeah.
So when I started my company, I did sales training.
Yes.
So that's what I did.
Yeah.
I started building a network.
Yeah.
In the financial services space in Kenya, and slowly, I mean, to be fair, when I started, it was very much a hobby. As and when work came, I would take it. I wasn't really driving the business. And everything changed when I read a book by Daniel Goleman on emotional intelligence. And I read that book and thought, oh my goodness, this is the stuff. Because, you know, as you work with salespeople, you get to see that there are some salespeople who just have an X factor. Right? There's just something about, and it's not educated. And I knew it wasn't because of education.
Yeah.
Because there would be some people who have this X factor and they are well educated, and some who have the X factor and they have no education, right? No serious formal education.
Yeah.
It's not an age thing, because there are some people who are older who have it and some people who are younger.
Yeah.
It's not even a socioeconomic background.
Sure.
I just knew there was always this X factor.
Sure.
And when I read about emotional intelligence, I was like, this is it.
This is the
X factor. Yeah. This is the difference. This is what differentiates the superstars from those who are mediocre salespeople.
Sure.
And so I started reading more and reading more and reading more. I started incorporating it. At this point, remember, I'm running the training company, I'm creating curriculum and facilitating it. So I started incorporating EQ into the curriculum.
Sure.
And the more I read, the more I was really fascinated. So the Joburg trip was, I got to a point where I realized that I wouldn't be able to, I was limiting my growth.
Mm.
So what I mean is, remember, I'm researching about EQ, I'm reading about EQ, and then I'm creating content.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's limited, right? It's limited to my ability to read more and create more.
Yeah.
So I came to a point where I thought, no, this EQ stuff is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So why don't I find an organization that does that?
Yeah.
Or is an organization that I can then partner with and they can give me all the content and the training.
Yeah.
I went online. The first company I reached out to, I remember they emailed me back and they told me they don't certify people outside of the people in Africa.
Sure.
I remember feeling offended by that, but I was like, it's okay.
Sure.
They don't certify people in Africa. Africa's not a market that they had reached yet.
Sure.
So then the second company, they're called 6 Seconds.
Hmm.
They were like, this is the process. And so I went for my certification in Joburg.
Hmm.
And, you know, I always say that I went for this certification, Savilo, because I wanted to help my clients, right? That's what I tell myself.
Mm.
That's what I told myself at the time, that let me go for this certification. Let me become certified.
Mm.
Being certified means I have this knowledge, number one. Number two, it means I have access to more knowledge.
Mm.
Because once you're certified with 6 Seconds, you have access to all their database and tools.
Mm.
And they have many. 6 Seconds is the world's largest emotional intelligence network.
Sure, sure.
So I went there thinking, this is it. But oh my goodness. That first week, I sat in class and it was freezing in Joburg. And, you know, for those who don't know me, I'm bald.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're bald, you feel the cold because the cold just comes in. You have no air cover.
Yeah.
So I was sitting in class. I was freezing. But that week changed my life.
Sure.
Because I was the one who was changed.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wow.
I sat in that class and learned so much about myself. You know, we talk about some of the masks that we wear. We talked about, just who we are at our core. This idea that we people are an iceberg, and we only show the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more beneath the surface that is not visible, that we often ignore. And I realized that my functioning dysfunctional upbringing caused me to have an overwhelming need for control, because of the fact that life was very much out of control. I realized that I need control, and so it influenced me as an individual, as a wife, as a mother, you know. And wow, so the journey began for me to understand myself, which is why I'm so passionate about helping people to understand themselves. Because I feel that that's where the breakthrough comes.
I'm going to come back to that one, how people can contact you, because I'm cognizant of time as well. I want to get into this bit about money and EQ, right? What's your... I suppose, how do you characterize your relationship with money? And I don't mean money in the churchy way, you know, where we try and hide, be like, money belongs to God. Don't want to know about money, belongs to God here. I want us to talk to the money itself. What's your relationship with money?
But it does belong to God.
I don't want that one. I don't want that one. I know that one is very churchy. And yeah, I know. We've done that one.
I love the way you said that. You put that disclaimer there. I don't like that one. You know what? I'm learning.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting question, right? I'm learning that I'm learning and unlearning when it comes to my relationship with money.
Okay.
I've realized that I have a somewhat, I tend to default to a scarcity mentality when it comes to money.
Okay.
And I'm trying to, you know, the beautiful thing about the brain is we can unlearn and relearn.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to shift my paradigm to one of abundance. And I'll give you a very good example. It may sound really silly, but I'll give you a very good example. Yeah. I was challenged recently. So just before in December, we had family visits.
Yes.
So my husband's siblings live all over the world.
Yeah.
And so they were here in Cape Town.
Yeah.
We go to Zim for Christmas. So en route to Zimbabwe, they came to Cape Town.
Yeah.
And I was challenged by something one of my brothers-in-law said. And, you know, he was talking about, like I said, it may sound like a really silly example. He was talking about Uber, right? So, you know, I use Uber, you know, I'm sure as much as many of us.
Yes, yes.
So when we're going to the airport, we use Uber.
Yeah.
You know, just here, there, everywhere, you use Uber when you're not driving.
Yeah.
And we took an Uber somewhere, I think. And so when the ride was over, you know how it comes up with that whole tip thing, right?
Yeah.
And so he asked all of us, like, oh, you guys, so how much do you guys tip the Uber?
Yeah.
And we all looked at each other. We're like, tip the Uber?
We don't do that.
Tip the Uber?
We don't
what
do that.
What are you
that.
Talking about, right?
Yes.
And it sparked a conversation that stayed with me, right? That stayed with me, and it stayed with me from the point of view of, and like I said, this is why I say that maybe this may sound a bit strange.
Yeah.
It challenged me that when I fail to tip the Uber, it's because I'm operating from a scarcity mentality. I feel so, right? Because if I'm operating from an abundant mentality, then why would I not tip? So last year, And let me take some steps back, and I'm mindful of the time as well. I think you'll have to invite me again.
Definitely. Part two. Definitely.
Part two. But last year, and you said something about how it's you know, looking at finances from a churchy perspective.
Yeah.
But last year I came across a book.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I can't remember who referred it to.
Yeah.
It's a book by Bob Lotich, Simple Money, Rich Life.
Okay.
And it's actually about money, but from a biblical perspective.
Oh,
and he talks about this idea of an abundance mindset.
Okay.
And he talks about this idea that many of us as Christians, we have a very scarcity mentality when it comes to money.
Yes.
And it affects our giving.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, for those Adventists of good and regular standing who are listening, we know about, we know about tithing.
Yeah.
We know about giving for the local church budget. Yes. But what he talks about is stretching yourself and giving from a place of abundance.
Sure.
And so it struck me. So these are, in relation to this conversation now about tipping the Uber, I remembered something he said in this book about how many of us operate from a place of scarcity as opposed to a place of abundance.
Mm.
And so it challenged me. Nowadays I tip my Uber.
Yeah.
I may not be a lot of money.
Look at
that. I'm trying to practice. So in answer to your question, I feel that I have been often operating in a paradigm of scarcity where I'm trying to hold on to everything I have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on shifting, you know, making decisions from a place of abundance. Now, that doesn't mean being wasteful. I have a tendency also to be a bit wasteful, but I'm thinking just the paradigm shift of saying, I am a child of the King who has everything.
Yeah.
I need to approach life from that space of abundance and make decisions from that place of abundance, as opposed to holding the little I have tightly in my hands. I hope I'm making sense.
Mm, makes a whole
I'm
lot
trying
of sense.
To open, I'm trying to open out my hands a bit more and trust that the God who has given will replace what I give. That's where I am with money, but it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
Look, a work in progress.
There is part two, so I'm going to leave the rest of that stuff that I was hoping we were going to talk about. My producers are listening, so I'm pretty sure you're going to have the second discussion. But I want to end it here. And I know it may sound like a very ironic question, or it may sound like maybe a question that's like, I mean, Tapelo, really? Where do you get this? Because I've always wanted to ask you this question. And the question is, what motivates you? I mean, you are a motivation just listening to you. But what motivates you? I'm pretty much sure that there are moments where you also need motivation. You know, as much as you are this person that's out there, that's known, that everyone looks up to. And sometimes you get the pressure. Maybe you didn't even call it upon yourself, but you get the pressure to be strong even when you don't feel like you want to be strong.
Yeah, yeah.
So at those moments, what motivates you?
You know, that's a great question. And and you've made me think back. My mom passed away December 2022.
Yeah.
And so last year was a rough year. And she passed away all of a sudden, right?
Sure.
So she wasn't sick. She just collapsed and died. She had the doctors tell us she had a massive brain hemorrhage.
Sure. Sorry about that.
And so thank you. And so thinking about that, last year was tough because, yes, you know, there's this expectation that you're going to be strong. You're strong. You're strong. Everyone encouraged. You're so strong.
Yeah.
And I'm a firstborn. I'm the oldest.
Yes.
So even more pressure, right?
Yeah.
So what motivates me? What helps me to kind of keep going?
Yeah.
I think that maybe it's a number of things, and perhaps my answer is not going to satisfy you, but it's a number of things. I think generally, my wiring is to keep moving.
Okay.
I think that's the way God wired me.
Yeah.
I'm wired to keep moving. And it's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing.
Yes.
Because it means that sometimes I'm blind to the fact that I do need to refuel and I do need help and I do need to ask for it. But I think I'm just wired to keep moving.
Yeah.
That's just the way God created me.
I know
so
exactly.
I'm very much keep moving, keep moving, right?
Mm.
But I'm learning that sometimes, like I said, that's a bad thing because it means that I'm not stopping to refuel.
Mm.
Yeah, need to refuel and the like. So I think that's one thing. And I know this may sound cliche, but honestly, the biggest motivator for me is my relationship with God. It really genuinely is. I mean, I'm not a perfect Christian at all. You know, I mess up many times. But just being able to go back and say, hey, God, I'm struggling. You know, I talk to God as if, we are chatting, just like this. I'm a talker. That's me. That's my nature. And that's my relationship with God as well. And sometimes it's we're happy with each other. Sometimes we're vexed, like, you know, over the last year and a bit since mom passed, there are days where I'm just like, okay, God, and one of the things that I am very clear about is I trust God 100%. And I know that the decision he made, I know that it's the right decision, but it doesn't mean I can't come back and say, but you know what? I'm not feeling that decision. I know it's right, but I'm not feeling it. I know one day I will see and I'll be like, okay, yes, God. But today, today I'm not feeling it. Today I need my mom, you know? So I think my relationship with God is what I would say is a great motivator for me. And then my family. Oh my goodness, my family. My family. I'm blessed to have a really solid community. Immediate family. So my husband and my sons. I have two boys. And then my extended. My personality again is one that I embrace people and bring them into my community, and they become my family. I'll give you an example of this. So I met a lady and we started talking and we really connected. And so at one point we went by their house and they go to the same school. Their kids, they've got a son in the same school as my son. So after we leave the house, my son turns to me and says to me, are these guys going to be another family? Like, as in, is this where this is going? Right? Is this going to be another? And I'm like, okay, I do that, right? I bring people in and they become community, but that motivates me. And then I think maybe lastly, I'm motivated by impact. You know, I'm such a believer in the idea that when you die empty. Let it be said that you gave everything of yourself. I'm very big on impact, and so that really motivates me. That motivates me and drives me to just be someone who, you know, leaves a legacy, and, you know, makes an impact in some way, shape or form. You know, I want to leave to make an impact. So I think, I don't know, I think those are some of the things that really motivate me.
I
take very seriously. I take very seriously the idea that I'm a steward of everything that God has given me, including my talents. And I take very seriously the idea that one day I'm going to have to give an account.
I just love how easy you just said, those are some of the things that motivate. I'm like, oh, look at that. Sounds very easy, but honestly, it's not.
And actually, for the purpose of those who are listening, that is not a question that was on any list. That one was just asked and answered right here. So that came from my head.
Definitely. So we're putting a comma here. It's not even a full stop, but we're putting a comma.
I like that.
And we're going to come back for this conversation. But in 10 seconds or less, where can people follow you for your services? Is there a website? Is there a Facebook page or social media?
Yes. So on everywhere on social media, it's just Muchamlingo. So you can go to my website, muchamlingo.com. You can follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you like. It's just at Muchamlingo. You will find me. And let's connect.
Let's connect indeed. Thank you so much, ma'am. Until we come back
thank
again.
Thank you for having me.
Have a beautiful one. It was such a pleasure having you around. Thank you so much. All right then.
All right then. Bye-bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.